And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of 8-Bits, the show where we interview people to learn about the people behind the tech. I'm your host, Brandon Minnick, and with me, as always, is the amazing co-host, PJ Metz. PJ, how is your week?
My week's going pretty good, even though it's been rainy and cold in Florida, which are two things you never want to see in Florida. And so, okay, like, it's... I feel like when I say cold, people... it's like 52 and my toes are freezing and I hate it. Like when it's in the like 50s, I'm like, I don't want to ride my bike. I don't want to go outside and it's miserable, but that's not actually cold.
Yeah. It's funny. Cause I was born in New York, upstate New York. So we're really familiar with ice storms, living on Lake Ontario and in the city of Rochester. And then moved to Florida, and when we first moved there, would make fun of people because it's like 50 and Florida people are putting on sweaters, whereas like we're used to negative temperatures and snow days. And then your body totally adjusts and you get used to the heat, and so when 60 rolls around, you start putting on your jackets.
Exactly. And then
now I'm in Northern California, where we'll get down to the 40s in wintertime. It doesn't snow here. But when it gets into like it's 50s and sunny, like that's warm and I'm outside in a t-shirt again.
So I'm not acting right now. My body adjusts. Actually are cold. very, very cold.
Well, feels good to be back. I was absent for one of the first times last week. I had to take a sick day. So thank you so much to Dr. G for filling in for me. Fairly last minute, had a bit of a COVID scare or just COVID.
scare, by which we mean you probably had COVID.
Probably had COVID. We'll say quick PSA, for anybody who hasn't gone through it yet. I had symptoms last week, but tested negative in 3 PCR tests over the term of a week. So the PCR tests never said that I tested positive, but my wife did, and we hadn't quarantined before she had symptoms. So I was definitely exposed to it, had symptoms, never got it. The doc just told me to treat it like she's like, you probably got it. So just treat it like you do. Just FYI, for anybody out there, you can, I guess, test negative 3 times on a PCR and still feel crummy. But I mean, at the same time, I was also recently boosted. I got my booster at the beginning of January. So I was like probably a week away from having the best possible immunity. And that's kind of my hunch for what happened is like, I got it, but not. I wasn't shedding enough of the virus to maybe trigger the test.
Yeah.
I have no idea, but I felt crummy. Dr. G stepped in for me.
That's right. And we had a fun episode last week. We were talking to Reg all the way from the UK, and she was talking about security and marketing. And it's exciting because I always love when we have people who have like some different backgrounds or are not just the typical person that you're going to see in computer science or in the developer world. And I gotta say, I feel like this week's guest fits that bill perfectly. We're gonna talk all about how I met this week's guest after we bring them on. But let's go ahead and introduce to the world, everyone, please welcome Jessica Garson.
Woo!
Wait, oh, I have a hold on, I did it wrong. I need
now it's
forgot. Brandon said, I have to do the reggae horn whenever the guest comes in. It's his requirement, y'all.
Nice. I really want to sample the reggae horn, so,
I got mine at youtube.com.
Great.
And I found a website that does this thing called MP3 ripping. And now I've got it. Jessica, welcome to the show. Welcome to 8-Bits. Thank you so much for being here. How about we start with you telling the folks at home a little bit about yourself?
So I'm Jess. I am a developer advocate at Twitter. And for fun. I have a hobby. I make music with code, and I perform under the moniker Messica Arson, mostly in the live code scene in New York, which there is. I think it's the coolest thing about New York, Live Code NYC, and perform regularly with them. And then I also have been playing more noise shows, which has also been really fun because I make music with code and I sample myself screaming on top of it, and it tends to be pretty harsh. So I've been venturing more into the noise world as well, which is kind of how PJ and I met, in like a weird intersection of all of those things. Oh, and I live in Brooklyn, New York.
It was an absolute combination of those things that led us together. And like the first thing that happened was I make Twitter bots. It's kind of my thing. And by my thing, I mean, it's the only coding I know how to do. And I was talking about a change that had been made to the process for getting what's called the Twitter developer account. And I was like a little frustrated by, I'm like downplaying it. I ranted about it on Twitter. And Jessica, who's a developer advocate there, DM'd me and said, hey, I'd love to talk to you about, you know, your experience with this. This is something we were working on, and I want to make sure that it's going well. And I, first off, this is my first interaction with a developer advocate, DevRel person from a company for something I'm using. So this was a big step for me. It was fantastic. But we got to talking, and we set up a time to chat, and I looked at your profile, and it said noise musician, and I went, wait, you make noise music? So for everyone out there, noise music is exactly how it sounds. It is harsh noise, but it is musical creation. It is an art form. And the thing that most people might be familiar with that gets the closest is like Sonic Youth. Yeah. Like there's some discordant stuff they did, but it is very much like you said, it is harsh. But those are that we immediately bonded over the fact that like I listen to some noise and I enjoy noise and you're creating it. And I was like, basically, as soon as I can, next time I'm in New York City, I'm looking it up because that's the kind of stuff I want to see.
Yeah. Also, I feel like I should play Florida because, you know, to hang out with you.
That's right. I can see some places where it would work, where it would fit in. We got some arts here.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, we're going to get to some noise later on. We're going to hear some, hopefully. That'd be awesome. But let's talk about your history. You are a senior developer advocate at Twitter.
Yeah.
How did you get into tech? What's the road path that you took from, like, did you know from a young age that you wanted to work with electronics? Was it a hobby that turned into a career? Was it a job that turned into a hobby? Because your hobby of making music with code is very closely connected with your job of working in tech. So what's that path look like? Take us through it.
Yeah. So I actually have an untraditional background. So interesting thing about me is I never wrote code until my late 20s at all. And so I got started. I come from DC, or from the DC suburbs, and DC is kind of like a career town. It is like a company town for politics. So, you know, I graduated from college and I was like, what am I going to do? Oh, I'm going to work in politics. Like, that's what I'm going to do. Like, there was no, like, I never really thought about it or like thought if like it was right for me or anything like that. I just was like, well, graduated from college in 2007 and that's an election cycle. So I have to go out and move to Iowa. Like, I knew what I was going to do. And, like, all of this sounds insane, right? But, like, at the time, I was like, oh, yeah, that's, like, what I need to do. And it's all kind of going as planned. And I did a couple of other campaigns in Washington State for Patty Murray on the campaign there. And all of a sudden, some like messy data came into my life. And also like my staff from like that time, I used to like manage staff that would do like voter outreach and things like that. And like one of my...
Uh-oh.
Oh no. You're having internet issues. Troubles.
No, yeah. That's...
Oh, she's back.
You're back.
It's been, today has been a fun day of like technical difficulties. My internet died like right before I was supposed to join this, and I've been like having some streaming issues. I live in New York, where I thought that there would be good internet when I moved to New York. I was like, yeah, New York, that's where like, everything happens and the internet's really good. But that was a myth. The internet is not
only like a few parts of Manhattan have great internet. Everyone else, it's very fend for yourself.
Yeah, that's true. Where did I leave off in my story, my journey?
You found some data.
Oh yeah, some like messy data came into my
life.
Messy
data.
Yeah, and I had to write code to clean it up, and I Googled.
So, wait, it was a necessity. It was like, hey, we have this data. It's like all over the place, and you were like, so they were like, someone needs to write code, and you were like, me? I'll do it.
I looked at like how much time it was going to take me to do the task manually, and then I was like, there's got to be a better way, and I like Googled it and wrote a Perl script. And was like, oh yeah, like I'm a wizard. I like wrote code and it happened. And like it made my thing happen. And like, you know, I am invincible. Like I just thought like to me, like that was actually a like transformational moment, because I never saw myself as a technical person. Like I didn't think that I had it in me to do that. I like didn't really think that that was available to me. And then like I did something that I thought was impossible. And like that, kind of like, that was like the moment where I was like, damn, all right, like if that's possible, like what else can I do?
That's so exciting. I love it.
Yeah. And then I also talked to like one of my like former employees from that time period. And they were like, you know, you were like obsessed with how data got into the database. And like, you know, like, that was all you would talk about. And like, you really wanted to be able to like make reports. And like you like, and I was like, oh yeah, you're right. And like, I just didn't think that that like was like a proto programmer thing. And then ended up after that job working in like the tech space of like politics. So I like got a job in tech support, as you do when you want to break into tech.
That's the fact.
Like a company that was like, did like email blasts and like fundraising and stuff for progressive candidates and causes. Yeah. I liked part of that job. Like I liked the like writing documentation and like helping people, like, but I didn't really like it. Like they were like, and then like ended up doing more data stuff, but like liked part of it. But like my favorite thing to do was like writing code and talking about it. And I found this meetup in New York, I mean in DC at the time where I was living.
Pause for technical difficulties.
More difficulties? Oh no.
There was another brief pause.
Okay. Where did we leave?
So you found a group in DC.
Yeah, I found a group. Here we go. Yeah. And it was free beginner friendly classes for women by women. And then I like had this community and I was like planning hackathons and like writing code and talking about it weekly. And when I Googled one time, so like I used to run this meetup called Hack Intel in DC, and it was like 5 presenters, and each presenter had 5 minutes to present and then 5 minutes for questions, and we would like time you. But the problem is like if you only have 2 presenters, then like it doesn't really work,
right?
You know, it basically meant that you always had to do something, because like that format only works if you have 5 presenters or like 6 presenters. But if you only have like 3 or 4, then like you need more time, because it's like 25 minutes of content.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, that format was really fun, but maybe doesn't set you up for success. But I one time Googled like how to make music with code, and I found Sonic Pi, which is like the Ruby way of live coding. And it's like a program that like isn't like an IDE. And there's like now this like really amazing woman, DJ Dave, that makes like really awesome stuff with that. And she like plays big like electronic festivals and stuff like that. And she's awesome. And she like is really inspiring, but like you could do so much with it. And I like basically like wrote code in front of people. And I was like, this is really cool, but it doesn't sound like me. And then I was like, what if I like sample myself screaming on top of it? Like that would be really cool. And tried to like book myself at like punk shows in DC, because I was like in a punk band and like was in that scene, and like people were like, wait, like, you can't just like write code at parties. Like, you can't. What are you doing? And then I moved to New York to teach at NYU. And then by that point, I was like a software engineer, didn't really like that, didn't feel fulfilled, quit my job, got hired somehow to be an adjunct at NYU to teach programming, which was like really awesome. It's kind of in this like weird spot where I was like, moved to New York, didn't really know what I was going to do. And then I had coffee with somebody and they're like, oh, there's an algo rave happening tonight.
And like, an algo rave?
Yeah, and it was like an event where everybody writes code that makes sound and visuals. And they were like, you should go to that. And I did. And then I met all the people from there and became friends with everybody and started playing shows on my own. And yeah, live code NYC, algo raves, learned about this amazing community. And then around that time, I was like having lunch with somebody and I was like, I don't know what to do in my career. Like, I don't know what to do. Like, I like don't really like being a software engineer because like, I just like the teaching aspect of it. Like, I like talking about things. I like writing code on stages in front of humans. I like use products better, but I don't necessarily engineering them. Like, what do I do? And somebody was like, no, that's developer advocacy. Immediately, like, I just started applying for developer advocacy jobs. And people were like calling me back right away. And I was like, wait, I guess that's it. And then I got hired by Twitter pretty quickly thereafter.
I can't imagine a better like position where it's like, most of what I like about coding is like helping people code. And so then you become like an actual professor, like an adjunct professor teaching coding. And so of course Twitter was like, oh, so you've been a developer and you've taught. Yes, absolutely. Please come over right now.
Yeah. And then they were also like, oh my God, you like have this community that like we've never heard of. That's like a programming community. And you ran on dev.to. And I was like, oh yeah. Cause I just like really like writing and talking about things that I am building. Like that is what I like to do. And like, that's how I'm.
Brandon, that's exactly how you explained it to me.
I think
me.
I might have frozen again.
You did for a second.
Okay, cool.
But that's, I was telling Brandon, that's how he described DevRel to me when he convinced me I should do it.
Yeah, because I mean, I'd say programming in general, and that's kind of one of our goals of the show is to break that stigma that like, you need to be good at math and you need to be, you know, the best developer in the world or the smartest person in the world to be a good programmer. None of that's true. Like the day-to-day stuff you do as a programmer, a lot of it's administrative, you know, having conversations about planning. And then most of the code you write is, it doesn't involve math. I know we're talking about algorithms here, but you don't necessarily need that day to day. And so, yeah, when I was trying to convince PJ and glad he did make the switch. I was like, PJ, you'd be really good at this. Like, you're an amazing teacher. You're an amazing public speaker. PJ was already really good at making videos and active in communities. And it was really cool, yeah, to teach you a little bit of code and watch you take off from there because now more people can benefit from your teaching.
And really, they're benefiting from you in the long run. It's benefiting from Brandon via proxy, PJ. Absolutely.
And one of the things that like we talked about, like the first time that we spoke, PJ, which like really resonates was like, you were like, because you had this issue and you were like, I don't know, like, I just don't think about things in the way that other people think about them. And I'm a little bit slow. And I was like, that makes you such a good developer advocate. Cause like you can spot the issues. Also, like, I think that like, for me, like not having it come to me easily actually helps me build more developer empathy, especially for like developers at different parts of their journey. And like, I don't know, sometimes.
Oh, I'll pick up from that. Because I agree with that so much because I always, anytime I'm teaching something, documenting something, I always think about what was it like when I learned it? Like what misconceptions did I have when I was getting into it or what mistakes did I make? And I want to make sure I cover those. And I've definitely gotten a lot of feedback from people. We'll say a lot. This feedback is certainly in the minority, but some people will be like, you know, you really made it too easy. Like this workshop, you gave all the answers. It's like, yeah, because it's a workshop and I want to teach you how to do it. I want to make sure you leave here with a working example that you can show off to your friends and family. Whereas some people try to make it like a challenge, like,
yeah,
step one, publish your website. And it's like, wait, what? I've never even written like, HTML. Like, you skipped a couple steps there.
The rest of the owl, draw the rest of the owl.
Right. Yeah. And I think also, like, figuring out, like, where in the steps things go wrong, I think is also, like, a big part of it, which is, like, if you know all the different places where something can break down, like posting a tweet, like, I can tell you all the different ways that it can fail. But, yeah, also, like, sometimes I'll, like, meet developers, and they'll be like, oh, yeah, this thing happened, and, like, I don't know why. And then, like, sometimes I don't know why. And I, like, really like that journey of, like, trying to get in their shoes and figure out exactly, like, why that's happening.
I think that's what developer advocacy is at its heart. Whether you're evangelist, advocate, rel, whatever it is, it's understanding what the developer has to do to use your product, right? So if you're at GitLab, like I am, and my community is students and professors, I need to know what pitfalls the students are going to encounter when they're trying to use GitLab. And GitLab is huge. The first time I opened GitLab and it was like, create a free account, I was like, oh, I'll do it. And then it was like, all right, get started. And I looked around and I was like, what do you mean? I don't know what this is for. I didn't know what I was doing. So
I am overwhelmed.
Yeah, I'm very overwhelmed. So anything you can do to take them down to just whelmed, at least, instead of overwhelmed, is a benefit. And Jessica, you're absolutely right. It is about knowing what those pitfalls are, because then you know exactly where they need help and they need like to see where they're going next. And that's how you help them through. Because if they know what the next step is, then they don't need you.
Right, exactly. And it's also like different audiences and like different pitfalls that they're going to encounter is also like one of the things that I'm becoming like a little bit more savvy on. And it's just like, the more I talk to developers that are actually like using things, the more I'm like, oh yeah, okay, that's what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. And for anybody listening, you don't have to be a developer advocate or in developer relations to do this. I found even before getting into this field, just as a senior engineer, mentoring, teaching people on your team and your company, all these skills are also very, very useful. And you can leverage the same takeaways just for when somebody new joins your team. Like, how do you get them up and running? Do you have it documented? Do you know, configuration steps just to get their computer to be able to compile the code, right? Little things like that. Like, the more you document things like that, then the easier it is for the next person. And yeah, that's kind of something I've always taken with me in my career. Because also what I found is, if you ever want to leave a job, if you've already trained somebody to do that job, then it's a really easy transition when you go to your boss and say, I'm going to switch teams. Because some managers are like, no, we can't do it without you. And it's like, it's okay. You're like, I've already trained this person. Everything's documented. You'll be fine.
Or it's, nope, I can't let you leave.
And then you just quit, because that's
yeah.
Yeah. Manager. And then that's not great. You can't leave. Yes, I can.
Yeah, the first thing that I ever documented was like a deployment thing, because like it was like the steps to deploy. Because I worked at this place and I was like, so how do you deploy? And they were like, oh, you have to like memorize this thing. And they were like, you have to like memorize how to do, like, there's a lot of steps and like a lot of room for human error. And like, I could maybe do it like right once, but like, and so I just documented it. I was like, all right, there's no documentation on this. And that was like the first thing that I ever did. And it also like, I don't know, made the workplace feel a little bit nicer, because like that workplace in particular like didn't have anything documented, and I was always like terrified to like do the task I had to do. And so yeah, I think that's something that like figuring out like where you can step in, especially if like you work in a place where nothing's documented, like you can help the future version of yourself.
man.
Yes.
The future version of yourself and new people are one and the same sometimes. Future you has no idea what you were going for.
Or like future you is like, oh wait, how did I do that deployment like a month ago? What was I doing? Why did I do it?
Yep. Be nice to yourself. And that's, Brandon, you taught me that early on when we were working on your new favorite poem, that website we made together. And you were like, hey, man, you better leave a comment here. You better say something about what this is doing, especially as we were getting towards like the end of an episode. And it was like, all right, we need to wrap up. And you would always go, okay, what did we do today? Write it down so we know where we are. Because sometimes it would be a long time before we'd get back together again. And we'd look at the code and be like, what were we doing?
Right. I always tell myself, I'm like, future me will appreciate this. You know, just take the extra couple minutes. And, you know, even I remember once we purposely created an error. So like the compiler would throw an error just so that next time we jump back in the code, we try to compile and be like, oh, that's right. This is where we left off.
Oh, yeah.
Just like, there's no way I'm going to remember this.
So, Jess, you say that your first thing you did was documentation, and then now you're at Twitter. What are you working on at Twitter? What is your team, or what are you as a developer advocate sort of focus on at Twitter?
As of like very, very recently, I stepped into kind of a newer sort of project. We're thinking about how to like monetize developers more, and like how to reward developers, and like what types of things like motivate developers, and like thinking about like one of the coolest things about the Twitter API right now is that we have a whole community of OpenMake libraries and tools to use the Twitter API with. I know PJ, you and I talked about, I forgot which library you were using, but you were using one too, right?
What was I using? Twit.
Yeah, you were using Twit. Like, there's Tweepy. There's this whole ecosystem of really cool tools out there. And like, how do we reward those folks who are making really amazing things? And like, how do we like people who are making really awesome content, like you, PJ? Like, what motivates you? And like, how do we keep that happening? And I don't know. So like, I've been thinking a lot about that. And then we recently, last week, launched something called Twitter Toolbox. I'll put the link in. And tools are basically things like bots or integrations that can help you improve your Twitter experience. And they're like third-party tools that folks are creating. And then, and if you are like, oh my God, I make a tool, even if it's a bot or like something like that, like ThreadReader is one as well.
Oh yeah, ThreadReader is great.
Yeah. That's one that is on the toolbox. But if you're like, oh my God, I make something that's cool too, you can actually apply as well at t.co/toolboxapply.
I'm going to go ahead and say that my Mountain Dew Kickstart bot should be in there for everyone to use so they can all scream at Mountain Dew about getting me a sponsorship for sure. Yeah.
Also, maybe that's the like reward that you need is a Mountain Dew sponsorship. You also messaged me that as well. You fed me that joke, but I think that we need to figure out like how to get more people the rewards that they want. Like maybe it's that we send you a box of Mountain Dew every like month for making.
Awesome. All right, whatever bots you want. If I can actually get that Mountain Dew code red, not even code red. Actually, I do like Code Red too, but literally, I've been drinking it on stream for those of you who can't see. This beautiful orange and white can of Kickstart, Orange Mountain, Mango Dew, whatever. It's even just smelling it.
What is that?
So this is what I scream about all the time. It is a coconut water-based energy drink. And I started drinking it because it was $1 at the store that I was at. And it was cheaper than everything else. And I tasted it and it was heaven. And that's all. I'm not saying anymore. You know why? Because they're not sponsoring me yet.
Mm. Well, I'm more of like a Baja Blast kind of person.
What?
We accept all kinds of Mountain Dew lovers in this show.
No, I love it. There's a rift in my marriage because my wife loves Baja Blast, and I don't understand it. But it seems to be one of those products that you either love it or you hate it, because anytime I bring it up to somebody, they either love it or don't drink it at all.
It's strong feelings.
Yeah. There's a Baja Blast seltzer coming out. Like, it reminds me of Four Loko back in the day. And I thought that was illegal now, so I don't know how they're getting away with that. Or maybe it's not illegal. But
I'm just, sorry. I'm so happy
I can talk all day about that.
You started that sentence
like,
with
formulate Four Loko, and now it's like, okay, but like, not
they had to like remove the caffeine from, or not have as much caffeine in it.
Yeah,
it's still around. You can buy a Four Loko if you really want to. And you can buy a Red Bull on the side, and it's the same. But I was there. I saw firsthand the dangers of Four Loko.
Yeah, the summer of 2014 was
Facebook memories showed me two things right next to each other one time. It was the night before. It was like, hey, I've got Four Loko and Johnny Walker. And then the next memory was, what has happened to me and my friends? And I was like, yeah, that's about right.
I spent a lot of time thinking about like what like the pandemic would be like if Four Loko was still around. Especially like the early like lockdown times, like what wow. What everybody would have been doing. And I think that's it's probably the best.
There would have been a lot of dropped pots and pans out a window. Instead of clapping for healthcare workers, they would have been hitting the ground for sure. That's dangerous. We are talking so much about all this, and I feel like we got to take a second step back and go to our sponsors real quick and let our sponsors do some talking. The lead-in of Four Loko is definitely a good idea. We'll be back in just 1 second, y'all. Hi, if you're hearing my voice, that means you've been listening to or watching 8-Bits with Brandon and PJ, and we're here to talk to you about your product and how it can help you in your life by do whatever your product does. So if you're an avid listener of the show or you watch us on Twitch, then you'll know that your product is right for you. It's great. It's such a good commercial. That's right, y'all. If you are interested in having ad space here on 8-Bits, you can contact us at hello@8bits.tv. Right? Is that right? Did I say it right?
Yes. Yeah, I was just laughing because it's you in the video, and then we come back and it's you praising yourself about how good the video is.
It's like that meme of Obama giving himself a medal.
He's like, what a great video we have there.
I can't believe what a handsome spokesperson they got for that commercial.
But oh, yes, man. You can email us at hello@8bits.tv. We'd love to hear about any sponsorships and happy to share it with all of our viewers.
Absolutely. I can't be the person coming out of that ad, I think. You're going to have to pick that up next time, Brandon. That's your job.
I completely derailed our conversation with Baja Blast. Mountain Dew, if you're listening, I'd love to give it a second chance.
That's right. Looking
at all the sponsors. Opportunities.
Oh, this is great. So, Jess, you were telling us about how you got into tech. You were telling us about working at Twitter, what you're working on at Twitter, and the toolbox, which is, seems really neat because one of my favorite things about Twitter is the variety of ways that you can do stuff with it, especially if you're learning to code. I can't say enough good things about getting your hands into an API, getting your hands onto a wrapper that's using that API. Do it and have some fun with it. Let's pivot. And let's talk about your hobby. Let's talk more about noise.
Yeah. Let's talk about noise. For me, like my turning into noise is actually kind of funny as well. Just like my turning into tech, I like didn't do it when I was younger. Like I didn't really like rebel in that way until my like 20s, to my late 20s. And I was in the DC punk scene. I had a punk band, left that punk band just because didn't really have the time to really do it as much as I would have liked. And also like kind of got bored of the DC punk scene. Like PJ and I were joking about this right before that, like every band like sounds the same. And that like everything felt really formulaic. And I didn't want to follow a formula. Like I just wanted to do like weird experimental stuff, but I didn't know what that was going to look like. Like I thought it was going to be me and a synthesizer and screen.
So like, that happens a lot in music scenes, this sort of like homogeneity that comes out of it. A lot of bands start sounding really similar. And like, this is something that's like, well, I mean, Blink 182 has a lyric about still playing in punk clubs, still part of these same punk bands. And that's what happens with a lot of art scenes, is because everyone finds the thing that works and they love it. And it's how we're expressing ourselves. But then it all starts to feel kind of the same. So what? So you had this musical background, right? And you were like, well, okay, I'm going to do something different. I want to do something interesting. And you were saying synthesizer, vocals, some screaming. And then you end up, you said basically you fell into programming, really. And then you told us earlier you found through the, what was it called? Algorave?
Yeah, I found the Algorave scene. and yeah, at the time, like my first show was like literally like how I would sample myself was I would like open up Audacity and like scream into my a USB microphone and like sample that and just like drop the file in there. And like, and then like there was one time that I like forgot to put like the slash in front of users and someone like yelled it out to me.
They were like live code reviewing you during your show.
That happens sometimes, like especially because like I show my errors. So like sometimes I'll be like really stuck on something because like I'm trying to do like a lot of things all at once. And like one time I was doing like a Twitch stream and somebody was like, this is what's happening. And that's like, I love it. Like, I feel really safe because like, you know, you see something, you say something. And like, I think that just means that you have like a community of people that are there with to have your back. And like, that's amazing.
It's fantastic. So is it possible? I know we were trying to do this, do some technical sharing earlier. I don't know if you can do it live or not. I don't know if we've got that capability.
We're going to try. I don't know if it's going to work. We're going to try something. It's going to be kind of experimental. I brought out my second computer during the break. so I think I'm going to try to join on my second computer. We're just going to try this live. I have no idea if this is going to work.
Okay.
So, you know, and like, honestly, like this is like one of the things we were talking about earlier is like one of my favorite things about like, because it's an experimental medium. I'm having some problems with my computer. I've had internet issues, some other stuff. Like, but one of the things I love is like, it is an experimental medium and like weird stuff happens and like, it's okay. Like it's okay to have errors. It's okay to like not know if it's going to work. Like that's like part of the fun. And like, I used to be like really intimidated when I first joined the scene. And then I think I was telling you the story earlier, but like I went to see Lil Data Play is like one of the biggest names in the like live coding world. And his computer like crashed and like, there were like 10 people trying to figure out like what happened. And I was like, oh, like that happens to me. Like, and then also I was playing in England with the person who made Tidalstick. Like I played before him. And then I was like, oh my God, like he's going to be awesome. His computer crashed like 6 times, like while he was playing the show. Wow. And I was like, okay, if that happens to them, like my computer could crash too. And like, that's okay. And like, I feel like that's like what makes it feel like really.
It's fantastic when you can find that kind of community.
Know that they're like, that their instruments are going to work. I have no idea if mine's going to work. Like, I really
can you imagine like going out with like a guitar and like the neck just like melts and you're like, oh, that's never happened before. I don't know why. Let's see if we can unmelt it.
Must be bad Wi-Fi causing my guitar neck to melt. Like, it's basically the equivalent.
And someone in the crowd is like, you need to plug into the Ethernet to keep your guitar neck from melting. You're like, oh.
So my other computer is having some issues loading because I have another idea, PJ. I'm gonna email you a song. Okay. I'm gonna let you choose which song. And I'm just gonna tell you some song titles, and you can make a decision.
Okay.
Spooky is number one. Also, audience, feel free to like give your input as well. Corners of Disorder.
That's a cool name.
Yeah, it might be the title track, although I'm not 100% sure if that's gonna be the title track. Mm-hmm. So yeah, if you have any ideas if it should be or not, like I'm in that process. Or maybe one that's like scream free, which is my signature. I mean, I think there's some lightweight screaming. NYSE.
New York Stock Exchange. Okay, so Spooky, Corners of Disorder, or NYSE.
NYSE does have a good story behind it.
I mean, Corners of Disorder sounds like, just as a title of a song, sounds cool.
All right, I'm going to email you Corners of Disorder, PJ.
Yeah, all right. So we're going to be listening to Corners of Disorder.
After you get the email.
This is officially my journey into actually being a shock jock, because now I'm actually doing music on this show too. I've got this. And like with a reggae horn, I'm halfway there. So that's good. All right.
Oh, it's so good.
Also, finding your email is like the next thing I'm actually.
Ooh, you can send it to hello@8bits.tv.
Hey!
Hello@8bits.tv is a good one. All right, we're going to try
that. Hello@8bits.tv sounds perfect. All right. And just like you can email us music, or you can email us requests to be the advertiser on the next episode.
Yeah, you can email a formerly live coded, going into my music folder. Now I'm like, all right.
I need to open up the right window so I can open our email, Brandon.
Ooh.
There we go. Because I only have it in my... It's all live. We'll show it all off. You can see my login and everything. So a reminder for those of you in the audience who are not familiar with noise music, it is discordant. It is purposefully a little bit harsh. It is noise. This is not something you're going to be hearing on pop radio. It's not the type of music that you're going to sit around and like be like, it's beautiful. But there's an expression there, and that's why I love it. I listen to some noise like Weasel Walter. There's a Japanese noise band from, I think, the 80s called the Gero Geri Gegege. And they are a wild band. They do 5-second covers of, well, not just this, but what I heard them from was 5-second covers of famous songs. So they'll be like, they'll do Baby Can You Light My Fire, but it's 5 seconds of noise and then it's over. And it's fantastic stuff. That stuff makes me so happy. But again,
do
it's not,
how
it's
it
not
started.
It was, it's so early noise, and I think Jess would know better. But it's really to do with like experimenting with what sound can be. Like, even if you look at like composers like John Cage, he did weird stuff with what was considered classical music, because they were saying, look, if music is a type of noise, what if we just made the noise? Like, John Cage had a song that's called 4 minutes 33 seconds, and it's just silence. It's nothing. And I was actually talking to my students about this when I was a high school teacher. I was like, it's an expression of something. The performance of that John Cage piece that's just silence is... instead of sounds that the musicians make, it is now the sounds of the room. And that becomes the performance. Because when there's no sound, your ears start to reach out for anything. And it starts picking up things you otherwise wouldn't hear. So it's So there's always been music experimentation. Like, John Cage was doing stuff in the 60s.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's like, it's kind of changed a lot as well since then. And I just think you should have an email, by the way. I forwarded you something that I sent for a comp because my upload speeds, of course, because my internet is being weird, aren't awesome. And then while we play that, I'm going to experiment with like seeing if I can like join the stream as me. So like there's a lot of like, so maybe there'll be some live stuff, but we'll see what happens. Did you get it?
I am looking right now.
And it's hello at 8bits.tv.
Yes.
Yep.
It should be.
Numeral 8.
Got it. 8 bits. Yeah. We're going to play nice. This is like the world premiere, I think, of
Corners
of Disorder for the. It was on a comp once. There is like a newer version that has like a bass at the end and more screams because, like, who doesn't like more screams?
Right?
Yeah. But this is like the older version.
I'm going to start it. I should be sharing my computer sound naturally but I have to use Black Hole because I'm on a Mac. I'm going to hit play and let me turn off this background, chill background music.
It's going to start with a scream, by the way, just all so right. Everyone knows.
Jess, I am loving this. This is amazing. Oh my God. So like, it's not in like is it in 4? What time signature is it?
I think the BPM on that is 198.
So 198?
Yeah.
That's fast. Wow, that's fast. Because it feels like there's a lot going on at once, but there's a cyclical nature to it all too, to each individual piece. Like the screams are on its own cycle. The music is on its own cycle.
So I play with polyrhythms through string length, which is like really fun because all the strings are different. Like, so basically the way that it works is that each sound maps to a letter of the alphabet. And then all of my strings, like I play different strings all at the same time and they're all at different lengths. And so that's how I do polyrhythms through string length, which is like really fun.
That's amazing. So what programming language are you writing these in?
Yeah, so I use 3 different programming languages for various different vibes. So that is like intense classic Messica, I think about it. Like before I went into the studio where I recorded that, I had like this like almost like manifesto of sorts where like I had like different like different phases of Messica. So that was classic Messica. And that's like loud and aggressive. And then I do like more droney stuff in Ruby and Sonic Pi these days. And that's like more chill, but like also kind of aggressive in its own way and like more ambient, but like kind of more drone-like. And then in Tidal Cycles, I do, which is like the Haskell wrapper for SuperCollider. And they're all wrappers for different languages. For another programming language called SuperCollider. And there's actually a PyCon talk where I talk all about like how to get started if you're like interested in that.
Wait, you have a PyCon talk about coding music?
Yeah.
We need to link it. We have to link it. I'm going to find you right now. That's fantastic. Because again, this is a fantastic and fun way of doing it's work because it's tech and it's coding, but it's like a very expressive way of doing it. And this is not something that everyone knows is out there. And so to show more people that this is out there, it's fantastic. Oh my gosh.
I agree. And I will say it wasn't what I expected. Because when you said it starts with screaming, in my head, I was thinking of like what, I don't know if this is the actual term for it, but I always called it screamo music, where it's kind of like heavy metal rock and the singer doesn't really sing anymore. Just like, yeah, guttural screams into the microphone. That sounded great.
It's dope, right?
Yeah, I love Jens in the comments. Is he left? It's a turntable emoji, cat turntable emoji. That's so perfect.
I found your talk at PyCon Cleveland 2019, and I just dropped the link in our chat for y'all. Making music with Python, Super Collider, and Foxdot.
And I think we're going to try something. I think there should be another version of me, yeah, Just TV, that's like, we're going to see if this works. I have no idea if this is going to. So like, I'm going to share my screen. That's going to be a minute of inception. Or no, that's me. That's me at a different angle. Okay, cool. Now I found the right button to press. All right. So let's just, I have no idea if this is going to work, by the way. So I'm going to turn on, what I'm doing right now is I am turning on Foxdot. We're going to see, and is this muted? Let's just double check. My hands are sweaty, so.
Yeah. For those listening along in the podcast, Jess is sharing her screen. Looks like we're in the Atom code editor. We have some code on the screen. And music coming shortly.
Maybe music coming. I don't know if music is coming.
That's
oh, Foxbot has stopped. Okay, cool. Yeah, so this is like, despite doing this like a million times, I hear it faintly.
There's an echo now. She just muted her, I think her main computer, and I definitely heard a music. I definitely heard something happening.
Yeah, I heard some drums.
Oh, yeah. So she, with Foxdot, she's typing a string, and she was telling us earlier, the string creates a sound. Each letter is a different sound, and so she's layering these things right now.
Yeah, it's funny to read the code because like the code says play, and then she has added a string, and the string is SGSS, capital C, capital C, capital C, F, lowercase p, lowercase p. And if you just looked at it, it would seem like complete nonsense. But yeah, when you think about it in terms of characters and letters are sounds, she's building music is code.
Yeah. And that's what's like, again, that's what I find interesting about the noise scene is that these things and these ways of stretching music as an experience are really, really, really unique and interesting and fun. Like you're experimenting, you're trying to do something interesting and you are saying, okay, this is what music is defined as, but it can also be this. And like what we heard earlier was absolutely music.
Yeah, and I was just thinking, you know, we were talking earlier about people new to coding and getting into it. What a better way to start. Like, if you're already into music, learn how to code a little bit, and then that can take off from there. Learn a couple lines of code here. You Google some things and copy-paste things from Stack Overflow to get some things working over there. The next thing you know, you're a developer.
Yeah, and then the other thing is, like, that's how I learned Ruby. Like I didn't know Ruby. I was a Python programmer. And now I'm like, cool. Oh, that's like the do. That's like what I do when I make my loops. Like, and like, it's just like a really fun way. And then also like, even if you don't know anything, like I really like weird and discordant sounds. So like the first time that I did it, I was like, oh yeah. Yeah.
That's what I like, right?
Yeah. And like, I remember following a tutorial to like do something. And I was like, oh no. Like that weird thing that I'm doing, that's what I want to do. And like, and because like, I really like repeating like vocals and things like that. I'm glad that we got something working. I was a little bit nervous that nothing would work. So yeah. And I think that's also like part of it is like the journey of like making it work every single time in every weird venue with every weird condition. Like it just like people keep inviting me to play places and like, it's really awesome to like get to know really amazing people, to get to know who's doing it, to like talk about, like I've learned so much about concurrency because that's like what's making all this happen just through the like live coding scene where like, I don't think that I would learn about that any other place.
It's great. I just posted a video of you at AlgoWave back in December. You performing with Zach Kroll.
Yeah.
That's in the chat. If y'all want to check out a live performance. Jess, I'm so stoked. Like, from me doing what I usually do on Twitter, which is yell at brands, to meeting you is exactly the best possible situation I could have hoped to get out of this. You were just talking about how important it is to like getting there and having mistakes and difficulties and things to overcome, and that's part of the fun of music. I feel like that translates to developing as well, and translates to working in tech as well. You know, it's, you're gonna find mistakes, you're gonna have troubles, and there's gonna be difficulties, but like part of that leads to you figuring out the best way to do it. Like, you didn't learn Ruby until you started using it in your music, and now you know Ruby. Like, it's fantastic. I love it. This is such a great friggin' podcast, Brandon.
Yes, and Jess, we only have a couple minutes left. We'd certainly love to have you on again. We can show off more of the songs, more of the live coding.
I might buy a sponsored ad when I like have a new album.
Yeah, hey, once the album drops, absolutely. But for the folks listening who want to tune in, check out your latest album, where can they find you on the internet?
Yeah, Twitter's probably, you know, as a Twitter employee, Twitter, Jessica Garzon. Yeah, find me on the internet. Also, if you make anything with the Twitter API or try programming in music or like anything like that, come and talk to me. And yeah.
That's right. And tweet your thoughts at Jess about Baja Blast Mountain Dew. If you find the seltzer, let us know how it is. Jess, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you for joining us for another episode. We'll see you next time on 8-Bits.